Then we clarify cases of Paul, because he was a celibate, recommends celibacy. And he gives reasons too about being free and all these things. And that's because he's a single man. So he talks about all the problems of marriage and all these things, the cares of this life. You got half the time for the Lord, half the time you got to spend with the other person. And he could say it that way because he was single and he has never been married. But being married, I could tell the other side. Right? So I could say that, you know, here Paul gives reasons for not being married. He says, so that you could give yourself more to the Lord, and so that you could have more time for the Lord. And so that in verse 26 it says, I suppose therefore this is good because of the present distress, that it is good for a man to remain as he is. And he says, let everybody be single, that's the best, because he wants everybody to be like him, serving the Lord. But being married, we have family, we can see the other side of the picture. And there is the benefits of marriage on the other side. Is number one, through being a father or a mother, I begin to sort of understand how God feels for His children. Something that you will not have until you have children. You know what children are like, you know all their faults and their shortcomings, and you learn to overcome, you learn to love them, learn to teach them, and then you learn your own insufficiencies when you begin to go into that. And you got to draw from God. And you don't know how much you like being a good father or good mother until you have children. Before that, you have read all the books, all the encyclopedias of being a good father, good mother. Not until you actually have them, then you know how much you like. And so that is one of the benefits. The second benefit is the vast majority of people in the world are married. And it's obvious that only those who are married can really counsel the married. That is why Paul himself says about the pastor, he says, let him have one wife. Right? In the sense like recommending that he be a married person. Because that's a whole group of people with marriages. They are broken, they are on the rocks, they need counseling. And only when you go through that, can you help people in those areas of their marriages. And third benefit of marriage, you could have someone who could pray with you, or who could agree with you and tap on the higher law of agreement in a way no other early person can. Yourself and your soul seem to enlarge as you unite with the person. You find that the other persons become like your alter ego, so that you could feed back. So there are the other benefits on that side. Some translation problems here that I want to point out here in verse 36 and 37. I studied the Greek very carefully to determine the translation, and I don't know why there's no scholar that has brought it up in any commentary, but I believe this is a lot of different translations. If you check different translations, they translate verse 33 and 37 many, many hundreds of ways. The word virgin here, if a man thinks he's behaving improperly towards his virgin, some people say towards his fiancé, or some people say it is the father talking about the daughter in verse 37. And then in verse 37, nevertheless he will stand steadfast in his heart, having no necessity, by his power of his own will, and has so determined in his heart that he will keep his virgin thus well. He says, there doesn't seem to be meaning in that verse, keep his virgin. Keep his virgin here means not to marry. But if not to marry means keep his virgin, Then how can you mean keep Miss Fuji? You keep her, means you marry her. So they interpret, or what is meant here is the father keeping the daughter, not let her marry. But suddenly it's like a different picture. And I wrestle with the translations. I look at it carefully in the Greek, and this is what I believe it should be translated. You can test it out, Greek scholars. Yeah, I haven't found the commentaries, and I don't have time to go and write commentaries. Maybe when I go from active ministry, then write commentaries. But I believe the word virgin should be translated virginity. And what he's talking about is the virginity which is in feminine tense, which is why the she is used for it in the Greek. And you put it there, then you understand what he's talking about. He's talking about keeping his virginity or not. And so if you put in verse 36, but if a man thinks he is behaving improperly towards his virginity, if it is past the flower of youth, and thus it must be, let him do what he wishes. If it does not sin, let him marry. Let the people marry. Nevertheless, he will stand steadfast in his heart, having no necessity but has power over his own will, and is so determined in his heart that he will keep his virginity thus well. And it goes with all the other contexts of what Paul is talking about. Chapter 8, he deals with the question of idols and idol food. Now chapter 8, 9 and 10 need to be taken together. We see here in chapter 8, he talks about how there are some people who are asking questions, and he says in verse 1, concerning things offered to idols. That means that they must have asked him that question too. So is it concerning this, concerning that? So concerning idol worship and eating idol food. First of all, he makes it very clear. He gives the full picture, and he says that there's nothing wrong in the eating of idol food in verse 4. Therefore, concerning the eating of things offered to idols, we know that the idol is nothing in the world, and that there is no other God but one. So he gives a full picture. There is nothing wrong in eating of the idol food. Then in verse chapter 10, he says, let's read in chapter 10. In verse 25, he says, eat whatever is sold in the meat market, asking no questions. Then in verse 27, if you are invited to dinner, just eat what is set before you, asking no questions. So it makes it very clear that there is only one main spiritual stand first, one correct stand. Then he talks about the sub stand, where those who are weaker, this is where you can stand. So there is nothing wrong, as long as the eating doesn't involve worship. That is in chapter 10, verse 20. But I say that the things that a Gentile sacrifice, they sacrifice to demons and not to God, and I do not want you to have fellowship with demons. So he gives us a strong stand. That is, he says, idol food is nothing. I know that there are sometimes Christians who believe you eat idol food offered to idols, you slowly get possessed by demons. But they haven't read, understand what Paul is saying here. And Paul said, whatever, you look at what he said in chapter 10, whatever is in the meat market, they can do what they want. They may offer it to 1,000 bales and then sell it in the meat market. You do not know. He said, just go, eat it. Nothing will happen to you. And he says, that is the strong and the correct stand. But he says, the weak brother, in chapter 8, he says here, in verse 7, There is not in everyone that knowledge for some with consciousness of the idol until now. It is a thing offered to an idol, and their conscience being weak is defiled. And it says, for their sake, for testimony's sake and for their sake, so that they will not be defiled. When you're with them, don't eat. Because to them, it is sin. For you, it's alright. To them, it's sin. Now, there cannot be two stands on an issue. There is only one stand. That's why Paul clarified by weak and strong. That means the strong one is the correct one. The weak one is for to go down to their level. Why must the strong go with the weak? If you can carry 40 pounds, you can definitely carry 20 pounds. If you can only carry 20 pounds, you can never carry 40 pounds. So the strong can always go down to the weak, but the weak can never come up to the strong. Because the strong understand that demons are nothing, spirits are nothing, they will not affect you. But the surprising thing, sometimes I even find pastors telling people, oh, when you go to a shop, you know, and you see an idol there, don't eat the food. There are very few shops you will find after that. And of all people, I least expect it from pastors and leaders, because here it says only the weak. So if the pastor is weak, what do you expect the congregation to be? Weaklings? So we must understand, as a leader, and as leaders, we must be among the stronger ones. I mean, if the leaders themselves are not strong to overcome demonic powers, how then can you expect the other Christians? So to the strong, the taking of it, and you pray over, there's nothing wrong. It will not cause you to be demonized. It will not cause a sickness to come on your body. It won't cause a sickness, the demon to jump on your back. A lot of people are afraid of secret curses. I mean, there was this missionary, and he was there, and one day he was praying, and there was this witch doctor trying to do all kinds of curse on him. One day he opened his door, and there was this chicken in front of him, all bloody, with the head chopped off and the blood pouring out, right in the front door. I mean, that was a definite curse on him using the chicken. He took a chicken cookie and ate it. He said, thank God for his provision. And I'm speaking as one who understands what charms and what demon powers are. You see, it's based on fear. Even a person who has a charm and a curse, they cannot affect you if you do not fear. The moment you believe in them, that's it. But when you choose to believe that God is almighty over all these things, and you won't be having a bunch of weak Christians walking around. So, the main concern is the issue of worship. To eat or not to eat, is whether worship is involved. Of course, they did the worship, whatever they did. When they offered, they must have worship. I mean, Paul understands this principle. Some people try to say, oh yeah, but they were worshipping. Paul is not talking about they worshipping, he's talking about you worshipping. I mean, the people who offer food to idols, what do you think they are doing here in the Bible? Think they are not worshipping? Of course, they are worshipping to the idol. But Paul says, as long as he himself doesn't worship, it makes no difference to him. But in 1 Corinthians 10, it says, when you become part of the worship, that is when it's known. Because you must not be part of the worship. So by eating, are you becoming part of the worship? No. But by partaking in the ceremony of the worship, either worship, then you are part of it. That's what Paul is talking about. And now here are important principles for us Asians here, because in Asia, we need to deal with the issue of worship and culture. Worship and culture. We've got to wrestle with it. Because a lot of Christians that believe that being Christians means to give up your culture. That is not what the Bible says. So, remember, most of culture may have its beginning once upon a time with some sort of worship. Because man is always worshipping something. But some things have moved out of worship into pure culture. Worship is not involved anymore. Like for example, the Indians, they like to put a dot on their forehead. Right? I forgot what that is called. What do you call that? Huh? Tattoo. Putu, that's right, the putu.